Are you excited? I don't
Very.
Know.
Yeah.
We're Very. Super excited.
Super excited. Super
excited. Dom Talk. A podcast about the USA. Today's topics: Trump, student debt, and facts versus emotion.
My name is Max. I'm from Düsseldorf, Germany, and I'm currently in Washington, where we're taping this in the good old Wish Housing. we are all participants in the Washington Semester Program, Journalism and New Media, and we are going to talk about, well, the election. What else? Who have the pleasure to sit with us in this table, and this is actually called Domcast. I don't know if this is on. Hashtag Domcast. All right, hashtag you can Domcast. Tweet it.
Yeah. So, should I just introduce myself?
Yes, please.
My name is Jana. I'm actually from Germany too. I go to LMU in Munich, and I'm doing American Studies there, and I'm spending a year in beautiful Washington. You should definitely come here if you haven't been here.
I'm Deja Howard. I am from Ohio out here, and I go to Otterbein University. It's a really small liberal arts school in the Columbus area. And is there anything else that I need to...
Well, not yet.
I'm Jessica. I go to Baylor University in Texas, and I'm studying journalism and political science. So.
And watch her, because she's the one who's doing television. So I'm radio, print, communication, and she's the one who's doing television. And I just heard that we should
pressure
make
is
it
on.
This
because we're right. The other way around.
Thanks. This is great because...
how could you read that?
I guess her face...
I read it.
Oh, you
read it
there,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a really small screen.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, but on every time else, anything time else you phone, they'll film something on your phone, it has to be the other way, so.
Yeah.
Anyone can make the mistake.
It's fine, Max.
Yeah.
Anyone can make it.
All right, guys.
You have to
come.
Oh. Probably.
Well, I think I just lean forward. And my mom's gonna be so
terrified
because no, she's like sit straight. And I'm like, yeah. All right.
It's okay.
I think we just for 2 minutes we just talk about our program, what we are doing here. So, what are we doing here in Washington? Why have we come from far and even farther to this beautiful place?
Who wants to start?
I guess I'll start. So I'm from Texas, a place in central Texas. I'm particularly really interested in broadcast journalism, on TV, on air stuff. And Washington, D.C. is a top 10 market, a lot of opportunities, a lot of great things to learn and people to learn from, and it's the place of politics. And so I've been working with politics and investigative reporting type things. So this was the place to come to for me.
I'm a public relations major. I'm getting ready to graduate soon, and so I'm out here interning as a public relations intern. I thought that it would be like a great opportunity to be able to be in a capital during the election, and also to be able to get professional experience, especially getting ready to start my career and things. So I thought, what better way to get that going?
Yeah, and since I'm doing American Studies, a lot of people are going to the U.S. for their study abroad semester a year, and I'm doing a year here because I want to get experience in journalism. That's where I want to, where I want to have my career later. And I want to focus on American politics, and it's just a great time to be here right now.
Indeed.
Which is a great transition. It's an awesome transition because things are crazy and. Yeah, you can probably lecture about those in 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, the election was probably the main reason I came to the States. I'm studying social sciences, so politics and media, and this is probably the best place to be to see politics and media going crazy.
cities, either politicians or journalists.
Or public relations, yeah. The borders blurred sometimes. So... Guys, the election. We think it's crazy, yeah? We thought it's crazy when we were back in Germany. I think we can agree on that. Now we're here, we think it's even crazier.
And it keeps getting crazier.
But is it just our external view, because we in Germany are used to boring politics, or is it just so crazy as we experience it?
I mean, I would think generally American politics are more of a show to begin with than German politics, but this election is completely unprecedented. Mm-hmm. There's been nothing like it before. And yeah. So I think it's kind of taken us by storm a lot, too, because a lot of people don't really know how to react to it. They're frustrated with it. They're upset with it. And it's just, it's been crazy. It's been chaotic. And it's just, it's been unfolding, and no one really knows what's going to happen next.
Yeah, no, we're just as surprised as you are. We really are. And I think that might even be part of the problem. I think there are a lot of people who, like, during primaries, before we even got to this point, figured that, you know, some other candidate would get the Republican, like, nomination. Mm-hmm. And I think people really started taking it seriously as the polls started coming in, and it started becoming more and more of a reality. And there was a point when there was a spike in people searching, like, relocating to Canada. And, like, so yeah, we're, like, just as amazed as you guys are, but I think it speaks a lot, especially with Bernie Sanders having been in the running on the other side, like, just how polarized perspectives are starting to get in the United States. And I think that's part of why such an unusual thing is happening in politics right now, because people are starting to, like, go diverge out to, like, opposite ends of the spectrum, and we kind of have to mm-hmm. get back into the middle before things will kind of level back out.
Do you think that part of the problem is that people didn't take Trump seriously? So, you know.
I think, see, and that's a tricky one, because I'm not going to say there's one reason for the reason Trump is where he is now. I do remember, especially I'm from Texas, which is typically a Republican state, and typically more conservative people who would side with Republicans on issues are from Texas. And so I know a lot of people at first, obviously there was like, I think it was like 17 people running for president for the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people, but a lot of people at the very beginning were kind of interested in Donald Trump because he was different. He wasn't like the rest of them. He was unprecedented. And so there was original interest in that. And I remember even, like, having conversations with my family about this and thinking about it. And I was just like, oh, it's just a phase. Mm-hmm. It's just a phase. Like, he'll just die out. You know, it's just one of those other people. It's just people are frustrated. People are tired with the way things are going. So it's just a phase.
Another Herman Cain.
Yeah. And it wasn't a phase. It never ended.
Still going.
He kept gaining more traction. And now he's, you know.
When did you realize that Trump is a real deal?
When he had traction?
Yeah. When did you realize, all right, this is really getting serious? He could be the
president.
So,
he could be a president. He could be at least nominee.
Yeah, so I think when it really hit me about this election that this is real, it was in the primaries. It was probably around February. I actually had the chance for my college newspaper to cover one of the Republican presidential debates. I was at the University of Houston. It was a primary debate, things like that. And we were sitting there. And this whole time, things had been happening, obviously. But when you see it on TV, it's just kind of like, okay, like, whatever. You can just kind of write it off as it's not real. It's not happening. You know, it certainly feels less real when you're watching it on TV or watching it on the news.
Yeah.
But I was there at the debate, hearing these things that he was saying. And I just remember I was writing down some of the things he had said that night, and I was actually using them as quotes in a legitimate story I was writing. And so I was just like, wow, like,
it's happening.
It's real. It's happening. You know, and I think that was kind of my wow moment.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, I didn't want to believe it until it was really, like, officially established, like, yes, he is the Republican nominee.
So
oh boy, I tried to, like, push until the bitter end, like, please, like, no, like, we know better than this, like, no, and that's the thing, because even, you know, and you're already speaking on it, like, he's not necessarily, like, representative of the Republican Party. There's a lot of Republican voters who feel alienated because they don't feel like Hillary Clinton represents their values, and they don't feel like Donald Trump represents their values either. And so I was surprised in seeing it, that it got to that point. But I think a big part of it was because there were so many people who stayed until the bitter end during the primaries. And so he got, I don't know, 40% of the, like, vote in order to become the nominee. And I think that if there had been some people that maybe, like, conceded their votes and kind
sooner.
Of dropped out sooner
example,
and kind
John
of let
Kasich
that go.
John Kasich.
And I'm from Ohio. I'm from Ohio, so I have a lot of heartburn about that because Ohio is like the only place that actually like voted on John Kasich because he's already our governor.
So we voted for him once.
Yeah. Even Marco Rubio.
Yeah, and so they like stayed like all.
So maybe they would have dropped out like sooner than other candidates.
And that's what I was really hoping for and really wanting that, you know, they would say we're all adults here and kind of figure out, you know, who was going to be their guy. And then everybody else would just, you know, concede their votes to that and have, you know, a more experienced, credible, less controversial candidate have the potential to be able to take the majority. And because everybody was so split within the party, and then in general, I think it contributed to that, and so I was optimistic, and then I realized, like, no, this is happening. This is a thing. Yeah.
But I think even more so, I think another reason why Trump has gained a lot of traction, I mean, you hear them say it a lot, you know, as a dig to Clinton, if you've been here for 30 years in public service, why haven't you done anything? And whether or not you think that's a valid excuse or not, obviously, you know, there's some holes in that.
30 years ago, she was in Arkansas. She
right,
it was
right.
half her to do something.
Right, like whether you think that's valid or not, you hear it thrown around a lot. And I think that is something that people genuinely are frustrated with. You know, they're frustrated with the state of our country right now. A lot of people are frustrated with the economy and foreign affairs and different social programs and things like that, and kind of generally where the country is headed. And a lot of people are really frustrated with, you know, nothing ever gets done in Washington, that kind of conception. And so I think that's why people were so interested in Donald Trump, because he was so vastly different than anyone we've ever had before. He was so vastly different than anyone who's ever wanted to run for office before. Whether or not he's made it an entertainment show or a presidential campaign, he's just different, and I think that's another reason he gained traction, because people want change, and I think at this point, people are very desperate for change. Mm-hmm. So,
what we talked about this a little bit in our program, what was the role of the media? Do you think, I mean, we asked some of our speakers this question, do you think that the media is responsible for Trump getting the attention and getting traction? You've been here during the time and maybe see what CNN did and Fox did and so on. So do you think it's it was kind of the media's fault that they just put Trump on air because, quotes, the ratings are good?
So from what we've heard from speakers, they basically say that...
they said no, basically.
They said no, it's not the media's fault, because, you know, as a journalist, you have kind of the responsibility to display, like, both sides. And, Trump just did a lot of things, you know, to get into the headlines, so they have to report on it. And if they don't, then it's not, like, real news. So...
Yeah. See, that was something I was frustrated with in the primaries. I don't think the media has covered this election in the best way they possibly can. And obviously, when we say the media, we're overgeneralizing, grouping everyone together.
Yeah.
I get frustrated when people say the media all
the
time. But I think especially during the primaries, I actually did a lot of research on this because I wrote an editorial for my college paper about it. But there was, you know, Trump obviously had the easy sound bites. He was sensational. And he was easy to cover. Because, you know, you didn't have to delve into, like, the harder topics. You just put a soundbite on there, and there you go. And he was getting millions and millions of dollars of basically free advertising that a lot of the other candidates didn't have just because of the things he was saying. And I think Trump did definitely capitalize on that.
Yeah.
Once he saw that it was working and, like, helping him get traction. So I think that's why it got perpetually worse and has kept going. So I'm not going to say that the media is the cause of it, but I do think all of these are contributing factors, because he did get a lot of airtime that a lot of other candidates, especially in the primaries, didn't get.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. It's kind of hard to, because you don't want to just place blame, like you guys were saying.
Right.
You have to do your job, you have to report what's going on and what happens, but I do think, like you said, during the primaries particularly was when it was frustrating, because I feel like he got so much mindshare. It was like very much like the first thing that people were thinking about and talking about when it came to the Republican nominees in the primary. And like you said, he got a ridiculous amount of money worth of, like, free exposure and advertising based mm-hmm. off of his presence in the media at that point in time. And I feel like you had to dig more to hear from and learn as much about the other Republican candidates. And I think that that's a big part of the issue, too. Not that it should be up to the media to try to control, you know, those yeah. things, because that's also an ethical issue in itself. It's, like, very difficult to bring about, and I think that's a big part of why Donald Trump has kind of flipped culture and discussion on its head a lot, because he, I mean, we all know, I mean, he's a businessman, and he had The Apprentice and all those things, and he kind of knows how to manipulate those things and use those things to their advantage and to promote himself, because that's how he got to where he is in the mm-hmm. first place. And so it then kind of ties people's hands, where it's like you can't just ignore him when he's doing newsworthy things. I mean, he has this whole, like, movement going and all these people who are listening to him now. But then at the same time, where do you draw a line and say, we need to, you know, give a greater range, we need to cover something else, we need to mm-hmm. give some face time yeah. to some of these other people. And, like, and then there's poor Jeb Bush. Poor yeah. Jeb.
Poor Jeb. Please, I really liked
he had Jeb. On his mugs that he was selling, his official Jeb mugs. They had a really good design. I really liked his mugs.
Did you buy one?
No. Well, if he had become the Republican nominee, I would have. But I wasn't.
there's this video of, like, very sad faces of Jeb Bush.
Really? No, I didn't.
He looks heartbroken.
Oh, yeah. Poor Jeb. So, everybody, I don't know. There are some people viewing. If you just joined, you can ask questions anytime. I think I can read them. I have my laptop down there and read the comments. So if you have any questions about the election or pretty much everything that's happening in the U.S. We have two U.S. citizens here yeah. sitting.
One from the north, one from the south.
So yeah. perfect. So if you have questions, just write them down. Let's talk about the debates a little bit. I had normally, especially in Germany, we have one debate and it really is pretty boring, and it doesn't.
But we're so excited that we at least get this yeah, one debate.
Yeah, it's yeah. always like, dude.
Well, and in going Germany, to debate? All the elections are a lot shorter, right?
Yeah, the election cycle is a lot shorter.
How long is it?
They're starting. We have the next election coming up next year in September 2017, and the Social Democrats are starting now to okay. finding out
so who's less than a year.
The candidate. And it's, I mean, they're finding it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's gonna take them, like, some time, yeah. and then we know. All right, this is the guy, and then there will be the real campaign starts in the summer. So maybe three months. Maybe
we're not voting for the. Yeah. For the candidate.
And yeah, we don't have primaries or something yeah. like that. Hmm. Well, the Green Party has something internally, so mm-hmm. their candidates are just touring around the country now.
So what is it like for y'all coming here and just watching this unfold?
It's scary. It's very scary, because yeah. I guess we as Germans are very, like, reasonable. And hearing yeah. a politician say stuff like Donald Trump mm-hmm. says, that's just not what we're yeah. used to hear from politicians. Yeah. And that kind of frustrates me, because it's mm-hmm. like, how do you think this is going to be diplomatic when you talk to other, you know, foreign
yeah,
leaders?
Yeah, that scares me too. Yeah. That really scares me too.
And that's, like, my biggest fear if Donald Trump becomes president, because I'm not living here, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
I'm really fearing, like,
you have one semester. You have one semester with a new president.
He's probably going to
so.
Throw me out then. what will happen, like, in foreign relations and also, like, with the NATO and stuff? Because he's criticized all of that, and
yeah.
that's actually, like, important.
Right.
Yeah. Things also
that affect
Germans.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I think about is, I mean, we tend to be a little bit behind everything in Germany, but eventually we get everything you have here in Germany, and
oh, God.
So. I always think, is this populism something, this kind of populism, we have populism, is this kind of populism coming to us, and how are we gonna deal with it? And I think there's some similarities between the parts of the society just not satisfied with the way everything works, and this anti-establishment movement, And I think it's, yeah, it's kind of scary to see, all right, in the United States, it's getting so far. Is this maybe possible in Germany? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's at the moment possible, but we have our right-wing populist party, which is doing pretty well in the last election and will do pretty well in the parliament election next year. So we have maybe Trump light mm-hmm. in Germany a little bit. But we don't have this, I'm afraid to say this as a German, we don't have this this leader, this one person. It's more like really the party who's which is getting the attention and not one mm-hmm. person who's a billionaire and was famous before.
Yeah.
And maybe this is good for us. Maybe there'd be some more charismatic
it's
persons.
It's a lot less show.
Yeah.
It's about facts. It's not about show.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which becomes obvious when you look at the
market. Yeah, facts. let us talk about facts. Do facts matter anymore? We had this discussion sometimes. I heard this question from Germany, so I'm just going to throw it at you. Do facts matter anymore, or is it just politics just about feelings?
Yes and no, because I think that there's a big range of different kinds of voters and different ways that people go about making their decisions. So, I mean, obviously the facts are important. People are, you know, fact-checking. People are, like, reading articles. People are really wanting to, like, know what's going on with the election. And, I mean, I don't want to represent the United States as, like, us just, like, floating around and not really, like, knowing anything about, you know, who we want to be the leader of the free world. That's not good. But then there are others who do have their personal convictions that I think can sometimes cloud that out. Or that people might even hear assess facts, but the way that they perceive them or whether or not they necessarily want to, like, read into that or factor that into changing their minds about something, I think sometimes they don't necessarily do the ideal thing with those facts. So there are people who would rather just, you know, stick with and vote with their party, or they're, like, you know, kind of already convinced and set into it, and so I don't think that even then that facts are necessarily something that they don't, like, look into or, like, receive or accept. But I think that sometimes they can refuse to be deterred even by that information or by those facts. You know, there are things in the last debate, not to, you know, step on any, like, upcoming topics, but, you know, that he said, he was even talking about, you know, like, abortion, and he was like, oh, yeah, somebody can, a baby can be, like, aborted, like, a day before they're
yeah.
supposed to be
yeah.
born, and it's like, that's not how it works. Like,
there's this
thing called premature, like, births, and, you know, just because your due date is on the 11th and a child comes out on the 10th doesn't mean that they were aborted and immediately, you know what I mean? Like, that's
yeah.
not factual at all, but there are people who are supporting that, and they're like, yeah, they're just snatching babies out of the womb and just
yeah.
repeated what he said. And it's like, no, this is not factual. This doesn't make sense. You all know someone who was born prematurely. That's not how it works. And there had to be medical professionals that actually, like, came forward and said, like, that's not how late-term abortions work. It's not that simple. It's not that, you know, cut and dry. And so, yeah, I think to get back to the question, yeah, I think that facts are important, but I do think that people do allow their judgment to be clouded and to kind of disregard their certain facts or accept false information to stick with their perspectives.
Well, and I think something different, too, that's different about America than a lot of other countries around the world. Do we have a question?
Yeah, but I can't read it.
Oh.
I think it's a statement.
Oh, okay.
Continue talking.
Something about America that's different than a lot of other places in the world is that our president, he is the head of government and he's the head of state. So those roles are done by the same person, both the symbolic roles and roles
yeah.
in the government, which that's a very different setup than a lot of people. And so I think that's why emotion does play so much into our presidencies, because that whole symbol, it's not just someone in an office making sure things can get done, and as far as policy is concerned, but he's someone who represents our country, who's the figurehead of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of emotion that goes into that, because there's a lot of things that represent America, that America is known as a lot of things around the world, both good and bad things, but it has a lot of emotion tied to it.
Yeah.
And I think, and everyone can kind of agree with that in some way. And so I think that also makes it a little harder, because if someone feels very passionately about something, that's going to be a factor. We're not just going to be, you know, we don't completely just rationally think about one side over the other, whereas in a lot of places you probably would. I mean, I can't really speak to that, but I do think that makes our elections different. I think that's why people do vote with emotion so much more than in a lot of other places.
I think what Germans need to understand is that, like, party affiliation for Americans is actually part of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And in Germany, it's it's not like
it's
that.
Not,
and well, that's why it gets so emotional.
I don't think we ever had this kind of affiliation.
Because, like, when you're a Democrat, you're a Democrat. Like, you are a Democrat. And the same, like, with Republicans. And also, it's, like, these two parties, and they have, like, very, very contrasting views. So I can kind of get why you wouldn't even want to try to, you know, try to see the other side, because it's so convincing, and you're kind of in your Democratic bubble or Republican bubble. So it's very emotional, like you said. So it's harder to, you know, step out of that.
Well, and it's not even so much that I think both parties want completely different things. I would generally argue that most people, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I'm going to generally argue that a lot of people are actually pretty moderate and want the same types of things. But I would argue that Republicans and Democrats just have different ways that they go about getting those same types
of
things.
True, yeah.
And so we care about the same kinds of things. We just think they should be done different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way our government's been set up, especially in the last decade, things have just become so polarizing. This is kind of this presidential election, I feel like, just kind of represents the epitome of where the last, like, decade or so of, you know, it has been polarizing. And I think more and more people have identified with their party because of how polarizing politics has been.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read a statement. We have some comments. Thank you very much.
Yay!
Yeah.
Someone's actually watching.
Yeah. And Franca says, so cool that you're doing this right now. So very interesting hearing how Americans think about the election. So shout out to you. Richtig gute Idee, Maxi. Very good idea.
What does that mean?
Very good idea. Thank you. And Alexander wrote, it's interesting, it's very interesting and very depressing to see that many people neither like Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton, yet other third-party candidates don't seem to get any boost in the polls. So, let's talk about a little bit about the third-party candidates, like Mr.
Gary Johnson
and Jill Stein from the Green Party. And this is, I think, a good question. I thought about, Trump is disliked and Clinton is disliked. Why can't they
gain traction? I think a lot of it does go back to party affiliations. You know, a lot of people are interested in third-party candidates. A lot of people probably would be interested in a third-party candidate, but they know practically it's not going to happen. The way elections happen, our electoral systems happen, the way, you know, the whole thing is done, it's not really practical or feasible. I mean, okay, technically it's feasible. It could happen, but it's not likely. It's very, very unlikely for a third-party candidate to actually be able to win a couple of states or win one state. That would be...
Let alone an entire election.
Right. That would be such a rare occasion that people are like, I don't want to waste my vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you have the...
So he's basically wasting his vote, which is kind of like... We would never say that.
No, but we have a different...
We have a different system.
We have... I mean, if the party gets above 5%, it's in the parliament and they can do some stuff. I mean, and you have the winner takes it all, and if you have a two-party system and you vote for Gary Johnson, well, the vote is, in fact, in a way, lost and wasted.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if everybody thinks this way, then...
It has to be all at the same time. I think that the big challenge, though, with it, because I've been putting more thought into third parties and the fact that we don't really, like, offer or acknowledge that, and people do believe that in voting for it, it is making a statement, at least big picture-wise, towards the future of being able to give better platforms to these other parties and being able to expand things from just being, like, you know, right
Democrats,
down the middle, bipartisan, like, basis. But it's just, especially with the nature of this election, I'm like, I don't know that this would be the time when I would want to be experimenting with trying to make a statement. And there are people who are really worked up, or people who are like really adamant, like Bernie Sanders supporters, and they're like, we don't want to vote for Hillary because we want to like punish, you know, the Democratic Party for, you know, everything that happened and took place, and they didn't think that it was fair how the primaries went over. And it's like, you never want to disregard, you know, a valid statement or a valid need to make an improvement, especially in something this important. But at the same time, I just feel so strongly about not letting Donald Trump become the president of my country that I don't have any interest in anything that distracts from that or could separate the vote from giving Hillary Clinton the majority. And that kind of goes back into the emotions thing that we were talking about, and I was thinking about it, and I mean, I do have an emotional investment involved in it, and then also as a minority, I just do not believe that Donald Trump should have a representation of me to the world. It's like, yeah, international relations.
He has the greatest respect for women. So
I, as a black female, feel completely and utterly comfortable with him going to the other side of the world and representing me. Yeah, it's just, it's not good. Like you were saying before with international relations, that's something that scares me too, because I am an American. Like, this is the only country I know. This is part of my like identifying. Even when I go other places, I'm going to be associated with this. And so I don't want him speaking on my behalf. I don't feel comfortable with it at all. He thinks that black people are all in Chicago and getting shot at. Like, that's seriously all he talks about when he talks about race relations and race issues. And he's
and the inner cities. And,
stepped aside from even talking about and really acknowledging police brutality or anything like that. And he said that he was going to fix the gun problems by having more police officers and stop and search, which is a police state. Like, that's really scary. Like, that's terrifying. And so all of those things and factors just kind of make it all the more emotionally involved, where it's just like, I can't.
I have a hard question for you. Which was the comment or the thing he said, Trump said, that was, you mentioned one, like, this is scary. What was the one comment you say, oh geez, this is just terrible if he'd be president? I have my favorite.
Very hard to choose. Did you have anything in mind?
There is nothing that he said that, I mean, out of this whole election, there's nothing that I've been like, wow, that's just the most awful thing I've ever heard. And obviously he said a lot of those things, but I expect nothing less.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. He says things and I just don't entertain it. I don't expect anything different, especially at this point in the election. So there's nothing that he does or says that really upsets me, if that makes sense. I mean, obviously I'm not okay with the things that he's doing or saying by any means. The shock value is gone. That's a, you know, so I wouldn't particularly say I've gotten too worked up.
I mean, this is the bright side. You will probably never have something quite
shocking you again.
Nothing can shock you anymore. So.
Yeah. I actually thought that when he said, you know, when he basically insulted women in that video that the Washington Post released, that was kind of the moment, like, and when he discredited his locker room talk, and it's just words. I'm like, no, it's not just words. Yeah. It's like the whole problem with, you know, inequality towards women. That's it. You know, it's not just words. It hurts if someone talks about you like that, and almost everyone has experienced it. And that's where I realized, where I was like, okay, this cannot happen, because he, over more than half of the country are women. Like, how can you be so disrespectful to all of them?
And still have women supporting him, nonetheless.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Nonetheless. But yeah, like, what I was saying before about the police state, that scared me a lot. That was definitely a big one. And then the other big thing was also during a debate when he said, and when he started saying, I don't want to say it, I don't want to have to say it, I was like, just don't say it, Donald. Just don't say it, Donald. And he said that he would have it looked into if he became the president to prosecute Hillary Clinton.
You'd be in jail.
Yeah, and there are people who were, like, clapping for him when he said, like, you'd be in jail. And, like, I know that you know, the godforsaken emails have been, like, a huge, like, controversy, and there have been mistakes that have been made and all of that, but I just think that to say and believe that as a president it's your place to try to reopen somebody's case when she's already been tried for this by our justice system that we've established, you know, like, this is unconstitutional, like, the things that he's talking about and saying, and it's like unconstitutional doesn't mean anything to him, and just the, like, idea that he feels like he can, you know, have somebody investigated and thrown into jail just because he feels like,
yeah. But that's kind of his mindset. I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you. I don't know how many people he sued in his life.
Yeah.
But see, okay.
That's like his solution to everything.
But see, here's the thing. Whether you agree with him or not, whether you love him, whether you hate him, most of this podcast, we've been talking about him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. People are still talking about him. Whether it's good or whether it's bad, whether you love him, whether you hate him, whether you agree with him, whether you don't, people are still talking about him.
Yeah. But I think part of why people are still talking about him is because there's so many people that are still supporting him. So when you talk about him, you talk about something that is still alive and still existing within the country. And it's surprising people abroad and people here because there has been this long existing thing that people are like, oh, there's all this progress. Like, women have all of these rights and things. Like, that's all fixed. Oh, there's all this progress. This is post-racial America. There's nobody that has any racist or prejudiced tendencies anymore. People don't get discriminated against for where they're from or how they look or how they speak. Like, that's not a thing. And now all of that is coming to the surface is actually still not only being a thing, but becoming a political platform. And that's worth talking about. I mean, even though it unfortunately now also promotes him in the process, like, I think that he is just largely representative of, like, a greater issue and a greater dynamic that a lot of people are trying to come to grips with, because it's something that everybody wanted to think of as being buried or being, you know, a very small number of people. There aren't that many people that feel this way about things, and now they're having to realize that perhaps there are.
Yeah. And my biggest moment with Trump was the last debate when he said, I keep you in suspense about the election, about if I accept
the
election.
I'm going to accept the results if I win. Sure. Who would have thought that?
So that was
childish.
On top of everything.
Well, it was really childish.
Do we have any more comments?
Do we have any more? I don't think so. But I think there are some people just joined. So hello if you just joined.
Hashtag Dormcast.
Yeah. Twitter. Yeah. Share it.
I just see the hate turning up and I've never done Facebook Live before.
I haven't too. So.
Not sure if those are comments or likes or people.
I don't think they're dislikes.
No dislikes.
Jessica, Deja, Jana, and Max. If you have any questions, there's still room for you. So just ask.
Our table, there's space.
Yeah, there's half the table is us, but half the table is you. So if you have any questions, just post it, and we will read it. I hope so. So you are going to vote. What topics are important for you? So. Maybe in the normal election, what topics would be important to you? But besides the whole Trump thing, besides the talk about his characters, so let's talk about a little bit about policy. I mean, I know it's a crazy word in this election, but what is this?
No, normally this is where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked 30 minutes, 40 minutes about Trump. So, policies, what's important to you?
Big things that are important to me would have to be education, obviously, especially becoming, you know, a student, graduating, and it's been talked about, you know, building up to this election and with Bernie Sanders, like, talking about, you know, the cost of going to college and paying for that and affording that, and, you know, if public universities should be affordable. And
how much do you pay for your college degree?
I believe tuition is about $30,000 at my home university. per year, so it's $15,000 per semester. I think I have that right off the top of my head. And there's also then housing expenses and things like that. And I mean, I do have scholarships and things like that that cover a portion of it, but there's a good amount of student loans that, you know, come into play and factor into it. I know I personally have over $20,000 in student loan debt that I'm going to have to pay off just in what I did. And I had help paying for it. My parents still took the majority of the debt involved.
So when you finish with college, you're going to be in debt like right away, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is something that...
And this is normal.
I have 20,000.
Well, I mean, I go to a private school back home. And so private schools are typically more expensive anyways. And so probably about with housing and things already factored in with the tuition, it would be about 50 a year. But luckily, they give a lot of money out in scholarships, like more than a lot of state schools. And then I've gotten a lot of scholarships on top of that. And I've worked through college and things like that, so that's all helped and made a difference. But yeah, college isn't cheap. It's not, but...
We were talking about policies, so education and
college. Yeah, education, the different things that they were talking about. I would be interested in seeing about, you know, public universities and making things affordable. I don't know that anytime soon that it would become free, even though that was something that Bernie Sanders was advocating for and talking about. And like, it's, I don't know, it's a pretty awesome idea. Why not shoot high and then go from there? But I mean, I think for like future generations and things like that, that having more accessible like education and you know, higher education at that, is a significant thing and a big deal. And then also just general economy like that. And that's a big part of what's difficult with it too, because I don't know a lot about economics, but I mean, just knowing about, you know, finding a job and the cost of living and being able to do life and exist. Like, these are all things. Yeah, these are all things that are very important. And like I said, getting ready to graduate soon and things like that, it is important to me to know that the person who's going to be, you know, of such great influence in the country, and not only just the president, but also, you know, within the rest of our government systems, are people who are mindful of and in support of doing things for people who are middle class, and then also supporting people who are starting their careers and starting out their lives, because that's where I am and that's where I'm standing, and I don't have, you know, a long-standing, like, backing in my own name of, like, you know, all of these funds to be able to say, like, oh, yeah, like, we don't need, like, healthcare or any help. I'm like, I don't know what kind of like benefits I'm going to have when I get my first job. Like, yes, we need to have healthcare. And so, yeah, all of that is a huge thing to think about when you start, especially when you start thinking about for the first time really starting to be independent and existing as, on your own two feet as an adult and being able to support yourself. So anything policy-wise that puts people in the best position to support themselves is a huge deal to me.
What about you?
I would say my hot issues, definitely military for one, but that's been something also very personal to me because I grew up in a military town. My dad, along with most of the other men in my family, are in the army or affiliated with the military in some way, form, or fashion. My dad had 6 combat tours, things like that. So military affairs are very important to me. And so how candidates handle and regard the military is something that's important to me, as far as like veterans affairs and things like that too. You know, there's a lot that happens when soldiers come home from war, and post deployments and trainings and things like that, and there's a lot of support that they do need for that. And I mean, this is also, I don't know, but I also would probably say, you know, having a strong military and things like that are all important to me. But then, you know, healthcare is something that's also very important to me. I know we had kind of talked about this a while ago when you were doing your story about me. But like, I have a pre-existing condition. And so healthcare is one of those things that terrify me when I graduate, because I want to be able, because, like, my prescriptions are really expensive, my procedures are really expensive, and as a journalist, I'm going to be not going to be making much of anything. And so healthcare is something that does scare me, because how can I make sure I can get the care that I need on the money that I'll be making? And so that is something that worries me and is hard, but I know, you know, we'll just have to figure it out with the state of healthcare in a couple of years. Who really knows what that's going to look like?
Right.
It's been changing so much. And then, I mean, there's some other issues too, like abortion would be another one of those issues that I would say is important to me, just because some of the issues with my faith and things like that come into play with how I feel about certain policies. So, yeah.
So
with healthcare, do you think, because I've heard a lot of times that Republicans are, like, so against, like, Obamacare,
mm-hmm.
because they say, well, you pushed it in your own party lines, mm-hmm. we didn't have a say on that, so we're not going to help you, we're not going to find compromises. How do you feel about that?
So I definitely, you know, the overarching theme of the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare and things like that, it was to ensure that everyone could get healthcare. And I agree with that need, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily agree with the Affordable Care Act or what Obama's been doing with that.
And what kind of irritates you with that?
So basically, it makes it a lot harder to get certain types of care. So for, like, specialists and things like that, it makes it more difficult, you know, because with greater access, there's fewer people, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it would kind of, I mean, I know it's not a socialized healthcare system, but it has some resemblances of that in a lot of ways. And it is harder to get in to see doctors. It is harder to get the things that you need done. It's more based on a system that is quantity of life rather than quality of life in a lot of ways. And to me, I kind of feel like, if I can't afford it, I'm not saying that other people shouldn't have healthcare, because I do agree that healthcare should be very accessible to a lot of people. I get that, and I get the importance of it, but I also at the same time feel like if I am fortunate enough to be able to afford the kind of really good quality care and be able to get the, you know, specialists I need and things like that, and even subspecialists, why shouldn't I be able to get that? Why should it be harder for me to be able to get those things? And I feel strongly about that because, you know, the kinds of, it's a juvenile arthritis that I have. And so it doesn't affect my quantity of life at all, but it does affect how well I can live my life and the things that I can do in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why I feel kind of strongly about that. Because I do think that everyone needs to have access to it, but it makes it harder for those who can't afford that kind of care. And luckily mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough and privileged enough to have come from a family who can afford that. And so it's kind of also, you know, you should be able to, you know what I'm saying? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I also think even I've had some friends who I've gone to school with who have tried to buy into Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act and stuff like that. And it was just so expensive for them to even kind of get basic coverage. So I think there's a lot of issues and a lot of flaws with it, but I'm not opposed to the greater
mm-hmm.
concept of what it's trying to achieve.
You know, Republicans and Democrats should work together to, you know, because Obamacare has provided healthcare to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are flaws. And
right,
there are
right.
so many, like, health insurance
mm-hmm.
providers backing out because not as many people are
right.
enrolled as they thought and stuff. But do you think that the solution is just to cut it out and create a completely different system where it wasn't better before? Do you think that they should work on Obamacare, or do you want a whole new system?
I mean, I'll say this. This goes for every single issue that we would possibly even talk about. No issue is cut or dry one side or the other side.
Yeah.
I think a healthy government and healthy issues and healthy solutions are a good mix of Republican and Democrat
yeah.
methodologies and ideas. And I think it's healthy to have that two-party system, but I think it's also, we've gotten into this, we can't work with them. We can't
yeah.
work with the other side.
Which is another
which is,
symptom of polarization.
Right,
yeah.
which I think is a greater problem, because I think no solution for any issue that we're facing in our country today can
it's
be solved
like one-sided,
one
yeah.
side or the other side. No side's got a perfect answer.
Mm.
So it should be both.
Your
but it just
is about dialogue.
Right,
right.
right.
Yeah. I think our political parties need relationship counseling.
And a good one.
Yes.
And a good one. we talked for quite a while. So if you have any questions, wrapping it up now. There has been a question, and it's about Trump. I'm sorry,
okay.
Again. from Stephanie, she wrote, I hope I can rewatch it later because I don't have much time now. But do you have real-life friends who are very supportive of Donald Trump? How does that work for your friendship? To me, it would be such a friendship killer if my friend actually liked him and his ideas. So, do you have Trump supporters in your...
My best friend is a Trump supporter.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah. No, it is.
So, how does that work?
We have never agreed politically for the entire... We have been friends since we were 13 years old. It is coming up on 7 years, and we can talk about any and everything, our deepest and darkest of secrets and fears, and we cannot talk about politics. We just can't do it. It does not work. I mean, Twitter gets problematic because then, you know, she starts tweeting and reposting the different things during the debates that are, like, more aligned with, like, her political perspective.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, like, no!
But you don't start Twitter wars or something.
No, I don't start Twitter wars. I think I, like, refuted, like, one point, but I was civil. I was civil about it.
Wrong.
Wrong!
Wrong, yeah. No. But... And I mean, it's probably not like the healthiest or best thing. We just don't talk about politics. And because I've known her for such a long time and I know her as a person, I know she's not, you know, like a neo-Nazi or a racist or anything like that. I don't think that she, you know, wants to kick anybody out of the country or anything like that. But I think that she is representative of a group of people who are, you know, voting with their party and for their party and very
so she's always
with
been
that.
A Republican.
And she's also avidly watches Fox News, and that's like where she gets her information, and that's her political perspective, and I still love her.
What about you?
Yeah, I've definitely known. I mean, I definitely on both sides. I mean, there's some people back home that are really, really, really for Trump. But then there's also a lot of people that I know who are only, they're not necessarily with Trump, they're just against Clinton. And there's a lot of people that feel so strongly about disliking Hillary Clinton.
Mm.
That's the only reason why they would even consider voting for Donald Trump. Not necessarily because they agree with him, but because they disagree with her even more strongly. And they have I would describe it as a lot of people having a really strong disgust with her. So beyond politics, just a disgust.
Is that only because of the emails or because of Benghazi or what are...
I think it's a culmination of a lot of different things. I'm not going to sit here and say it's one thing over another thing, but I think it's a whole lot of different things that have happened over a long period of time that have just kind of built up into this, you know. And so there's a lot of people I know back home that's how they feel.
But it's not a friendship killer for you.
Well, I mean, you have to separate it. You have to separate yourself
only
from
two
politics.
Parties, like you're going to miss half of your friends.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. You have to separate
true.
It. I mean, obviously there's some people that you can have really good political conversations with. I mean, even some of my roommates here, we don't agree on much of anything politically, but we've had some of the best conversations I've had about politics just because we've been able to actually talk about it. We've been able to talk about different approaches to different issues, and those are really great and really enriching as long as they stay civil.
Yeah.
It's when people start getting mean and nasty and
personal.
That's when things get nasty, and, you know, if you can't do that with someone, then you just have to stay away from it.
I think our politicians could learn from us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably.
You should advise them in the future.
Yeah. Your communications. So
perhaps.
All right, we've talked. I don't know how long. We talked a lot.
Yeah, we did.
It was a lot of fun, and in the end, I am going to end on a different note. I did this in Namibia at the end of my show. Just ending on something happy. So I'm going to ask you what made you happy today or on the weekend.
Hmm.
I mean, we have Monday. It's always tough. But if you have anything go. This is the fun part.
My best friend came to see me this weekend.
Right.
So my best friend
a lot
from
of
Texas.
Pictures on Facebook.
There's only a couple. Yeah, my best friend from Texas. So we spent the weekend together and just explored a little. And
National Mall and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was a nice little visit from home.
I went to Howard Homecoming on Saturday after there was the TED Talks during the weekend, and then there's also Howard Homecoming.
A professor was participating in the TED Talks. So
and I missed
super
it.
Excited.
I missed it.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, Iris did really well, though. It was good. It was interesting hearing her talk about relationships. She always references how much she writes about it and things like that, and so I was always curious to actually kind of get a peek at some of the works that she does with it and some of her takes on relationships and life and things like that. And so it was cool hearing what she had to say about it and things like that. So I felt very intellectual. And then I got to also, you know, party too. So it was like the best of both worlds. Intellectual and social, all in one weekend. Yeah. Very well-rounded weekend.
Very good.
I had a lot of things that made me happy this weekend. The weather yesterday was awesome. I just loved like walking outside. And I got a huge package from home, which was awesome. Yeah, it was very cool.
Don't talk about packages from home. I'm still missing mine.
Since how long? 2 months?
don't. Yeah, it's almost 2 months now, yeah. 6 weeks. Well, I will find it.
You should track it down.
I should track it down. I will do this. What made me happy? It worked. Everything. It's so great. Thank you so much. And
sure.
I think some people were engaging, so I think this won't be the last time. And I think we will do it after the election also, so we can talk a little bit, not so politics. So thank you. And now I'm.
And if you like it, share it with hashtag GrowthCast.
Like it, share
it. And you can
hashtag
write GrowthCast. Even if you have questions or things that you want to know, just write it, and the next one we can do, we can answer those questions.
Oh, God, I fell off.